Hello again. This is between consent. I've got to remember now. It's been so long. Between consensus and conspiracy podcast. After a 4-month break. So quite a lot's been going on. We I haven't seen you, have I? Really much in 4 months? I mean, we've spoken a
not
bit.
Not much recently. No. No, we saw each other quite a lot during lockdown, and then. Just became a regular thing, that didn't it? And then we didn't see each other much.
Yeah. So we saw more of each other when we were locked in, and then as soon as we were let loose, we didn't see anything of each other for a bit. Well, so you've been working a bit, have you? You've been going back to work a little bit.
Yeah, it's kind of like desperately trying to get back to some sort of normality, aren't
we? Yeah. And it was nice to get back to that normality.
Yeah.
And now
that seems to be quite brief.
Yeah, now it seems you're getting back. It's kind of weird because I've had a day today. I've had my first. Today has been a bit like a lockdown day because it's school holidays, isn't it? And my wife went back. We had to go into work today, so I had to. I had to stay with the kids, which is always kind of nice. But you find it was a reminder of what it was like. And there are nice bits to it, but there are also bits that aren't that nice to it. Because when my son would just be happy playing his game, my daughter would be happy looking on YouTube or whatever it is, and I can then fall into the trap of just getting on to having a look on my phone, and then I've just realised I'm just on social media a lot more today than I have been when I've been working. And it's been nice going back to work because you just, even though work is significantly less money and busy, at least just being out there is kind of nice. So today when I've not been, I mean, I've done stuff with the kids, we've had a laugh, we've done some stuff, but still I get to the end of the day and I just feel a bit shit, not just because I've been on social media, which I think does affect my mood definitely, but I just feel like I've not been productive, you know. I think I'm a bit scared. I don't know. I'm apprehensive about being locked in again, you know. So I wonder whether or not that clouds my judgment, because I always think that we make our minds up or our opinions based on emotion, and then we look for the evidence to kind of make that make sense rather than looking at the evidence and then come to a conclusion. I think we all do it the other way around. So I try and I try not to do it, but I'm kind of so dreading having to be locked up again that I find myself not, you know, just taking the side of anti-lockdown people. I wonder if that's just because I'm desperate not to be locked in again, or whether or not they make more sense. Have you got? I haven't really spoke to you about your opinions.
I've kind of felt that way from the start, to be honest. I remember having conversations right at the very beginning, talking about, like, well, I thought the best, because I noticed. I remember when I first got kind of aware of it. I remember looking at the news footage from Italy. And I noticed one day, after a couple of days of looking at the footage, I noticed that there were they showed some field hospital, some extension they built onto the hospital, filled with beds, people on ventilators, and I noticed that they were nearly all white-haired people. They were nearly all old.
Yeah.
So it became quite kind of clear to me from what I could see and what I was hearing, that it was, and I think that was out in the public quite early, that it was a much more of an issue for older people, older men specifically at the time, and because that was the news that was coming out of China as well. So I remember having those conversations in March about, I think the best thing to do would be to lock up older people and everyone else kind of try and go for some herd immunity. And then obviously that's what Sweden did, and that's what we said we were going to do but backed out of, and so I've always kind of had that in the back of my mind. Not that I was against the lockdown when it happened here, but I'm definitely kind of against going into another one. And it's quite strange going back to work. I went back to work about 6 weeks ago, maybe a little bit more, and it was great, because even though we were a lot quieter, there was, you noticed there were a lot of people coming in, there was a lot of movement, there were people coming to the restaurant, and there was, I just felt this, I felt as though there, you could see some kind of recovery, but also that there was a desire for people to get back to normal, because that was always the concern. People will not want to go out, people want to stay at home, they want to work from home, but it just felt to me, from what people I was meeting, that there was definitely a desire to get back to some kind of normality. And it was lovely for about 4 weeks, and then London, I suppose, 3 weeks ago, shut down, started closing restaurants again at 10 o'clock at night, and that had a real impact on us. And I think it was almost like, it was, like you said, it just, you don't want to go back to that. You don't want to go back into lockdown.
Mm.
I presume we're not going to go back into lockdown when kids will go to school. I don't see any other way around it. I can't, unless it gets severely bad, I can't see we're just doing what we did in March.
Well, I think that's when it first started, got political, didn't it? I think, because you mentioned herd mentality, what is that as well, but herd immunity. I think that was the point, it got really political really quickly, didn't it? Because we're willing to sacrifice old people. And ironically, I think there has been, there is a stronger argument of sacrificing old people. If you look at the Times story yesterday, whether or not it's true or not, that certain old people, if they were hit certain criteria in various subjects, they weren't to be resuscitated and stuff like that. I think there was mad panic at the time. I think people were making decisions in a mad panic, and I'm just adverse to judging people in a situation that I can't possibly imagine what it was like at that time. But I think that herd immunity thing really quickly turn people against it, because if it all went bad, then that was going to be, that's a heavy cross to bear, isn't it? That has been a big argument, hasn't it? At that time, I know everyone backed off it, and it was a difficult one to argue. I remember having a discussion on social media about it, and I thought it's not an argument that I feel really comfortable having, because it's hard to have that argument without looking callous. But I think herd immunity. I think most people just look at it and say, you're going to let it ravage through the system. And I don't think that is the case. That was that Barrington declaration that came out a few weeks ago, where 20,000 people, qualified people, obviously there were some that weren't, because as soon as it came out, certain newspapers just went into discredit mode as much as they could, which I kind of feel quite bizarre. Because I think that sort of stuff, if you've got 20,000 qualified people saying, look, what we're doing is wrong, there should be another way of doing it, and their argument was that we protect the most vulnerable, but what you want is younger people to get it. And if you can get students getting it who aren't going to suffer, then it does create a kind of dilution with the virus and creates a bit of herd immunity. I know, look, I'm not arguing one or the other. I'm not qualified to argue, but I just think that there are really strong arguments on both sides, because I would listen to them and I thought they make utter sense. And then you listen to the BBC News, and then you listen to the hospitalisation numbers across Europe, and you think, bloody hell, that is quite high. But it's difficult to know, because then you'll get another group of people to say, well, look, they're talking about cases, but now if what they're saying is that 80% don't show any symptoms, non-symptomatic, so are they realistic figures if we compare to what it was back in March and April? And, if those case numbers do look high, but if you're only looking at 20% of those people that are suffering, then maybe less so. So, look, it's just cloudy, isn't it? And I don't want to be the one making those decisions. But someone made an interesting point the other day. If you're one of, those people that are not planners, but, what those Ferguson, what do they call them? don't they project what's going to happen and stuff. And there's so many variables, isn't there? And it's like anything. If you've got 20 variables, if one get one slightly wrong, you can be miles off. But the argument was that those people are always going to be pretty conservative minded, because if they get it wrong one way, it's not a disaster. But if they get it wrong another way, it totally ruins their careers. So if you predict bad and bad happens, you predicted it. But if you predict bad and good happens, then everyone's happy because it's good and you don't suffer necessarily. But if you predict good and bad happens, that's it. Your credibility's gone. But I think the issue is, what with the argument that people are making, is that they're just looking at it solely on the illness level, not the other level, not the effects of mental health, not the effects of the economy and stuff like that. So that group of people aren't looking at the other downsides to it. So it's difficult, isn't it? You know, I mean,
yeah.
I, as I say, I don't know. I think I know what I'm not, for sure. I'm not one of those cranks who believes it's all a plan because they want to tag us, and it's, you know, I genuinely don't understand the Bill Gates stuff. It just makes no sense. You know, it makes, you know, but it's all a big scam by globalists and stuff. I'm certainly not there, but I'm torn between the two groups of experts, because both seem really credible.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. That's one thing that kind of like really properly depresses me almost. The amount of people I speak to that can go down those rabbit holes of nonsense. It's just bizarre. And it all kind of, it's so often, those conspiracy theories, so often, it's so weird. They so often go down the avenue of they want to wipe out mass amounts of the population. But then the basic contradiction there is that they're locking everyone up to save life. It's just so full of holes, a lot of those conspiracy.
And there's no getting through to people. Nothing I can say changes a tiny bit of mine, you know. And I've got friends that are there, you know, I've got friends that are there. And it's cult-like thinking. It genuinely is cult-like thinking, because whatever you say just bounces. Whatever you say, whatever logic, you can't get through. It is like a cult. You know, it genuinely is like a cult. You know, I don't want to be rude, but it's the only thing that I can... That level of certainty. I mean, the one thing with me is that I just, the more I read, the less I know. You know, it was the old Socrates thing, wasn't it? The more I learn, the less I know. And I never quite understood it. And then someone gave an analogy a little while back that really made sense. It's like if you're a lone woodsman in a forest, and you've cleared a circle around you, and the circle around you is your knowledge, and the forest outside of that circle is your lack of knowledge. So you know you've got that little circle of knowledge, but as you chop the forest and you expand your level of knowledge, you are expanding your knowledge and reducing the amount of less knowledge. However, the circumference of your circle gets bigger as your knowledge gets bigger. So where your knowledge meets lack of knowledge, it feels like you know less. And since we've been locked up, I've probably read about 10 books. And now I'm back working, I'm listening to books as well. So I do expand, you know, but whatever I read then makes me, oh, I want to read that, or I want to read that. But even the Churchill book I read, well, I listened to it, 50 hours, the Andrew Roberts one. But every chapter of the Churchill book, because he had a 70-year career, you could easily write another book. Because it kind of scans that part of his career. But every chapter or every battle could have another book behind it. And there's so much we don't know. And it's just the certainty of people that just gets to me. That people are so certain they know what they're talking about. And they don't. I think we've frozen for a bit. So I think I'll keep talking till he comes. Till he comes back. I'm good at that. That's my strong point. Are you back? I'm going to pause it.
I've got you up until like every chapter. You could.
Churchill book is an example. So it just spans a 70-year career, and every chapter you could write a totally other book. So he'll have a kind of, you know, 50, 40 pages on whatever the Boer War or whatever it was. But, you know, you could easily get another 300 pages if it went into a bit more detail. So there's so much we don't know. And that's the issue, this level of certainty. And I know what it is, that people think they're certain because, in the main, they're tied to a political way of thinking. So, for example, I was thinking, if like Boris Johnson, if you hate him or if you love him, you're irrational both ways. Because if you love him, you're going to defend him whatever he does. And if you hate him, whatever he does, he can't do right. So I just can't be bothered anymore with people on either side of that, because you're just arguing against someone that's already set in their ways. And that's not a defence. I think they've made loads of mistakes.
No, I agree, but I just don't. I don't get the total vitriol. I just wouldn't, like I've said before, probably on this podcast. I wouldn't want to be in any of their positions. No. It must be the worst job in the world. I mean, especially Boris. It's Jesus Christ. Not only has he got to fight this, he's got to sort out Brexit at the same time.
Yeah, and he is a bit of a libertarian, a liberal in a sense. I think he is a liberal on many things that he said. He's proved that. And now to control this, you have to be really illiberal.
Yeah.
It's just what done my head. It's just that trust thing again, isn't it? And that's what upsets me. Is the thing with the Guardian, because I knew when that Barrington Declaration came out, and that was they're credible virologists and scientists. You've got Gupta, Professor Gupta from Oxford. And then you've got a load of Americans as well, and another 20,000 people signed up to it. The Guardian went straight into trying to discredit it, and they found, one gave a false name, another one gave a false name. And then what they did was, one of the top three people, they went through who he'd done interviews with. And he'd done a podcast with some guy who runs a podcast, I'd never heard of him. And because that guy on a previous podcast had someone that somebody thinks was that denies the Holocaust or revises the Holocaust, they're now linking that, you know, respected virologist with Holocaust denial. And that's my issue. If you've got an issue with what they're saying, argue what they're saying. Don't say, he spoke to him and he'd spoke to him. So that means even though he'd never spoken to him, because they've got someone in common, that kind of link. Do you know, it's just the sort of stuff that does my head in. It's just not the sort of stuff, I don't know, it just seems to me they're playing the ball and not the man continuously. But again, it's the same sort of thing. They've made up their mind. And anything goes up against that, they've got to discredit it. And we're not trying to find... And that's what pisses me off with the whole political stuff, because if we could get our heads together and try and work together instead of everybody trying to score points at every opportunity. But I suppose that's not... But then that's what China hasn't got. And China can deal with it better because they haven't got that to-ing and fro-ing. Yeah, and do we want to be China? And
it's true, isn't it? The amount of time that's wasted on this back-and-forth nonsense. It's insane, isn't it?
I just find it exhausting. I just can't. Yeah. I just can't indulge. I don't. I can't even turn the radio on anymore.
No, I gave up listening to radio quite early into it, actually, when it was just constant. I was listening to LBC a lot, and it was just constant bashing of the Tories. And it's like I said, I mean, look, there are lots of things that have happened that I think they were piss poor on. I think Boris has been piss poor throughout. Yeah. But I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. Some of it might have had to do with the fact that he had COVID in the middle of it.
Yeah.
And some people said it was a bit of a struggle. But I definitely know it's kind of around that time and for a few months afterwards, he went AWOL.
Yeah,
If in any way he wants to compare himself to Churchill, he's like, nowhere near it. I mean, whatever you think of Churchill, at least he was there. He was a leader. Yeah. He was a figurehead.
Yeah.
And Boris price is nothing of the sort. But
no.
Again, I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. You know, it's such a tough thing. I don't think anyone, like I've said before, I don't think anyone knows what they're doing.
Well, but we've got him. Before. Yeah.
No one's locked down countries. No one's ever destroyed economies.
Yeah.
No one's ever shut a country up. Like, they're going about New Zealand, how great a job New Zealand's doing. They've shut their country off.
They got more sheep than people.
What's that?
They got more sheep than people.
Well, yeah, exactly. It's a lot easier for them to do.
Yeah.
But also, what's their tourism industry like?
Yeah.
It's probably decimated.
Well, they're in the middle of nowhere as well, aren't they? So they're not a hub. They're not a hub. You know, if so many people in the world want to get from...
But also, okay, yeah, that's one way of doing it. You can shut yourself off to the world, but you're storing up problems.
Yeah,
it's not gonna disappear. It's not, no. How long are you gonna do that for?
Yeah, no, you just create problems,
years,
don't you? Yeah.
If we don't get a vaccine for 5 years, you're gonna have to shut yourself off for 5 years.
As Thomas Sowell said, there are no solutions; they're just trade-offs. You know, that's the grown-up world. Yeah, there aren't solutions; it's just trade-offs. And sometimes, if you try and solve a problem, you can often create a bigger problem than the one you solved. And it's a long-term thing, isn't it? See,
I don't want to, like, have a go at her.
Yeah, no, of course.
I don't think anyone knows really what they're doing.
Well, there's no pattern, is there? That's the thing. You know, if you look at Italy relaxed things, didn't they, for a bit, and now it seemed like they had it really under control, and now there's been an explosion of cases again, yeah? But you look at California, as far as I'm concerned, have been really strict all the way through, and they're having an explosion of cases as well. And it's there's no correlation between people that have been forced to wear masks and people that haven't been forced to wear masks. I think there was a correlation between with those eastern countries because they all wore masks and the spread was low. But just because there's correlation doesn't mean that there's that links to causation, does it? It could be many other things. I mean, they could be disciplined when wearing masks, but it's not that discipline that is stopping the spread. It could be discipline in other areas, couldn't it? So yeah. there is no, you know, even Sweden the other day, on a podcast I was listening to the other day, they're relaxing things for old people now. So old people are now allowed to go out, whereas we're kind of doing the opposite because the figures there are low now. But again, that doesn't mean that they're right and we were right and everyone else was wrong because their country is very different. You know, their density and stuff. Because we thought, didn't we, the third world was just the wrong, the developing world, we're going to suffer, didn't we? That was what we were really worried about. But really, in retrospect, I was thinking, well, they don't have the healthcare systems that we've got. However, they're a much younger population. There's less obesity levels, more time spent outside, vitamin C and stuff like that, and so I think it's devastated their economies, isn't it? Places like India, South Africa.
That's the thing. I was thinking about this like last couple of days about the SARS thing in Nigeria, and you look at the protests and the riots. I mean, look.
SARS, you mean by the police? SARS. Just to clarify, SARS, not the illness. SARS, police. There's a thing going on in Nigeria, isn't it?
Police brutality. But I think in a way, I wonder if that's just a kind of because it's developed since then and it's become in many ways like the kind of George Floyd protest developed into something else.
Yeah.
And you had Antifa jumping on the bandwagon and it kind of morphed into another thing. Yeah. I think this supposedly these protests have morphed into anti-government, anti-corruption. They've turned into something else.
Yeah.
And I do wonder. I've been thinking the last couple of days whether a lot of that's to do with COVID, because they've got a very young population.
Yeah.
Really high unemployment. I don't know. I've researched it, but I wonder if the unemployment's getting worse and it's leading to stuff like this. You've got all issues in the Middle East. You've got issues in. I worked with someone and he got a phone call yesterday. He got a text message, yesterday. He spends a lot of. He goes on holiday quite often to Thailand and Bali. Last time he was in Bali last year, he had a cab driver with him all day and stayed with him for about a week. And he got a text message off this cab driver yesterday saying he's desperate for money, they've got no work, there's no tourists, can he send him money? And you kind of, we're very insular here.
We have our own little,
it's terrible, and Boris is terrible, and the Tories are terrible, and they want to starve kids. But, and I look and I think, half of me wonders, well, why is it always the same countries, and how come Spain's getting it, and France getting it, and Britain are getting it again? But actually, it's probably hitting everywhere.
Yeah, of course.
We just don't have enough time to take it all in.
But I listen to this, right? This is mad. I'm sure it's not, but it's quite an interesting point. You know, because I listen to Brett Weinstein, he's a biologist quite a lot. And it was and there's other things that I've picked up. Viruses, bacteria, it's all pretty strange what goes on. And there's so much to it that we don't know. But there are some weird things that I've heard about. So, you know, like, mice are instinctively scared of cats, yeah? So they're instinctively scared of cats. However, there's... I'm no expert. I'm sure going to balls it up. So I'm sure I'm not going to pass myself up as an expert to most people. But I think it's a bacteria. What's that thing that... can't remember what it is. There's a disease or a bacteria that comes from cats, and they reckon something like 70% of the human race have got it in them, and also the people that have got it are higher risk takers and stuff like that. But what it is, when the mice get it, the mice are then not instinctively scared of cats, and so much so that they get attracted to cats pee or cats poo. So it turns off the instinctive thing that makes them scared of cats and makes them attracted to certain parts of cat waste, and that's because the cat it's not bacteria, I think it's something else, can't remember what it is, but it's got into the mouse, and then so it's working with the cat without the cat knowing, obviously. So I do wonder that, you know, if we, what the way that we're meant to beat the virus now is for us all to stay and not mix. Maybe the us staying at home has sent us as beings a bit mental and forced and makes it attractive to go out on the street and mix, which then helps the virus spread. I'm sure it's not that, because I think it's got a lot more to do with bloody social media more than anything, and that takes it to a different thing. You know, viruses working with social media. I'm sure that's not happened, because evolution would take time to think. But it's certainly working with the virus, creating that anger and getting people out on the streets and mixing and shouting. It's just the last thing that you need to do, isn't it? Because we're angry people shouting in the streets. So... But it is driving people mad, isn't it? I mean, I don't. It's not a coincidence this has all happened at the same time. I mean, there's my theory is with social media. I think social media is not so much designed, but it's become something that sets people apart. It's become something that just makes things black and white, in my opinion, and no room for nuance. It's kind of strange, because I think nearly every situation, every argument, I reckon 95% of arguments is the answer's in the grey. Only 5% in black and white. However, I think in social media or the media and the way the newspapers or news, it's as if 95% of things are black and white, and that there is no nuance. And I think that's where a big issue is. So, yeah, I don't know. It's going to be a long winter.
My only hope is that there's definitely a change. And I don't know if that change, because if you look at the numbers, and I know we weren't counting that many numbers, we weren't counting that many cases at the start of the pandemic, because we didn't have the ability for the testing. But there's no doubt that those cases have risen drastically in the last few weeks. Well, all I'm hoping is that the deaths don't go into the stratosphere. I don't.
Yeah.
I'm confident. I'm just hoping for a bit of good news that the deaths stay quite low.
Yeah.
The deaths can stabilise around 100, 200, 300 even.
Yeah.
And not go into the 1,000 and 900.
Yeah. Because that was terrible, wasn't it? When that was happening, that was I'd look at them figures every day, and I didn't even want to crack jokes, because you just thought it's misplaced, didn't it?
Yeah.
even though humour is sometimes
outrageous,
yeah, even but, though
but hopefully, I mean, I know. Hopefully, they can stay low because there's. I've heard a few people saying that is what will happen, and it will give me confidence if that is what will happen. That actually, some people know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what that's down to. Whether it's the virus is getting weaker, whether it's hitting younger people and not having so much of an effect, whether it's that we can treat it better. You know, there's so
many viral load was something none of us had heard about a year ago, but I think that's why medical people were getting it worse, wasn't it? And that's because they were getting more of it, and maybe because we're keeping away from each other, keeping distance, not mixing as much, and masks maybe, all probably mean, I'm wondering if that is the case, that more of us are getting it, but because we're getting it a very small viral load, that's why it's not maybe having any effect that it did have. I don't know. I think there's a lot more scepticism now, though, than there was in March. I'm noticing a lot more people aren't believing it. Yeah. You know, but all the people that were freaking out are slowly putting photos on Facebook of being really close to people. I went out with boys, you know, with a couple of friends on Saturday, and straight away, I'm Maltese cousin saying, be careful, cousin, social distance. You be careful because it's a bad virus. And I'm just thinking, you know, I'm only out with my mates. And you know, you need a bit of an escapism. I'm not scared like I was scared. There is nothing in me that is scared anymore. I mean, I'm not going to be jumping on people and stuff like that. The only thing that I'm worried about is Christmas. Even our dad came down, didn't he? So he's been down on a train twice. And even he's been out and about going to Shepherd's Bush and their favourite Chinese restaurant and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So he's been out and about wearing his mask underneath his nose and stuff like that. So even and work-wise, I'm seeing loads of old people out in the shops and stuff like that. So I think people aren't having it. I think Chris, even my in-laws are just thinking that, you know, you've got to live your life to a certain extent. You can't. And the one thing that I've noticed, whenever I see elderly relatives, I've noticed that a lot of people are aging. Maybe because I'm not seeing them very as you know, maybe there's been big gaps in seeing them. But I don't think people would stand for a big lockdown. Do you remember when they were getting the behavioural psychologists before to see what people would stand for and what they wouldn't, and they were surprised at the compliance levels in March? I don't think there would. I don't think there would be compliance. I just think people aren't as scared.
It was a bit of a novelty, wasn't it? That you could get your wages paid, you get 80% of your salary, you could sit around. It was almost kind of weird way, it was a kind of holiday element to it, but I think reality's hit now that we couldn't afford to do that again.
Yeah.
I think it'd be a total disaster, it wouldn't work.
No, I know.
And it's so much harder to do it in winter than it is summer.
Oh yeah, no, because we had a good summer. I remember the first days back at work when I'd come in home after a day's work and plonking myself down on the sofa and feeling how good I felt. Just to be knackered. Now I'll go up, have a shower, just be knackered and clean, do you know what I mean? At the end of the day. It was just something that you just take for granted. Anyway, we was going to try and talk about the American election as well for 20 minutes, half an hour or something, weren't we?
Yeah, new story, aren't
it? Well, I thought we'd be a lot madder by now. I think a lot of people on my social media have toned it down. I think it's a lot can't, considering it's less, well, just over, no, a week, isn't it? A week today.
Yeah, just over a week, yeah. Week
tomorrow, is it, Monday? What is it? Monday? Oh, no, yeah, week tomorrow, then.
Monday today. No, it's next Tuesday.
Yeah, next Tuesday. So it seems pretty calm. Maybe the shit's going to hit the fan the day after. Maybe. Yeah, maybe that's when it's all going to go a bit wobbly. I don't know, mate. Yeah, because you know what I think is really... Because I think there's hysteria. Look, this Trump business, me and you, because it's so hard, isn't it? Because I remember the first ever podcast saying to you that it's weird because Trump isn't someone that I would like. When I used to watch him, that Scotland documentary of the golf course, I detested him. Everything about him, all the qualities he's got as a human being aren't qualities that I think are for a good human to have. However, the way that the media treated him, I kind of oddly found him as an underdog. And they irritated me so much. There was a certain amount of pleasure that he was kind of getting one over on them. Yeah. So we kind of worked out that we're not pro Trump. We're more anti Trump. Is the anti Trump that was the issue? However, after 4 years, the novelty kind of wears off a bit, and I never saw him as a fascist in waiting. I just think he's too self obsessed to have any ideology. So I think there's a lot of hysteria in relation. Now that doesn't mean that I think he hasn't done a lot of problematic things, because I think he has. I just don't think he's the monster that they're making him out to be. But I think the world would be a better place if he wasn't in for another 4 years. There's people I really respect, conservatives, that do see him as a real danger. And they're people that I really kind of do. And so I kind of think, give them the benefit of the doubt. But the thing is, both sides have been driven mad, yeah? I think what you've got to realise is people are looking at different things all the time. We watch stuff, all of them. I mean the proverbial we, as in people, we tend to watch an imbalance of stuff. So we're watching the stuff that suits what we think, and we assume that everyone's watching what we think, but we're not. They're another group where we're watching the mirror image of that. And I think everyone is driven by fear. I mean, I know the right have always been accused, rightly so, of using politics of fear. But I've definitely seen the left do it of late. Maybe I'm just because I don't class myself as one or the other anymore. Maybe I just notice it more, or it's new. I'm not too sure. But the scary thing is both groups of people feel that their nation is at stake, or their way of living is at stake if their side lose. So whatever happens next week, I think there's going to be a lot of people that are going to be really unhappy, probably close to half the population that are going to be shit scared. And yeah. I kind of think that whoever wins needs to be magnanimous and kind of put a hand out to the other side and try and bring people together a bit. And you know 100% Trump cannot possibly do that. It's not in his nature, is it? Because he's not done it once in the 4 years, has he?
No.
So you would hope... And I think Joe Biden would attempt it, but it's not... But some of the people behind Joe Biden, or the ideology behind... that some people hold that support Joe Biden, does scare the shit out of me. But I think it's a safer bet, isn't it? They said with Trump and... Oh, sorry, go on, you say it.
No, I agree with that. I think I rung you a couple of weeks back and I was like, I can't, I don't know if I can take it anymore.
Yeah.
If you pay any attention to it, it's just exhausting, isn't it? But it's also, the press have exhausted me. They've kind of just battered me down. Because it's everything, it's constant, it's every day, you know? And I'm just kind of like sick to the teeth of it.
There is no balance.
Yeah, you're right. It's not just Trump. It's not just the stupidity of Trump. It's kind of the dishonesty, blatant dishonesty of like so much of the media. Well, that like kind of fascist Hitler thing. I think it's absolutely disgusting.
Yeah.
Because none of these people are stupid.
Mm.
They know he's not a fascist. We've had 4 years of it now. No, he's nowhere near a fascist.
He's not even an authoritarian, is he? You know.
Nothing. What has he done? Nothing. He's done nothing.
This COVID thing.
There's still immigration into America. He's never jailed or threatened to jail any journalists. He's nothing. It's just not nonsense, and they know it's nonsense. So to use that kind of language, I think it's disgusting. Always that. Right from the word go.
He's not trying to take any power away from the states, is he? The states have got the power. He could have easily, with COVID, started to say, right, we're taking over. He hasn't done that. That isn't that authoritarian streak. But
well, that's the thing as well, isn't it? And it's that contradiction of the left.
Yeah,
they've been calling him a fascist and a dictator and literally Hitler for years, and yet when it comes to COVID, their criticism of him is that he wasn't authoritarian enough.
but it's not just
him. Diktats and nonsense.
It's not just him, though, is it? It's just everyone from the right is always something. You know, Joe Biden said against John McCain, John McCain is the all-American national hero, isn't it? And remember when Joe Biden was said, oh, he's going to have, to a black audience, said he's going to have you all back in chains. You know, implying he's going to try and bring slavery back. And what was it, Mitt Romney? Had Mitt binders, Romney, but had binders of women, and you know, all sorts of stuff. You know, there's always a hysteria, isn't there? And there's always a hysteria from that, but it's hysteria from both sides, isn't there? You listen to Ben Shapiro; he's hysterical about. Hold on, right. Sorry, I lost connection for a minute. So, what were you saying?
No, I was just saying that you're right when you said that that both sides, or the extremes of both sides, almost feel as though if they lose, that the country's going to be changed forever. But I don't know. Having said that, it does feel like in the last couple of weeks it's kind of toned down a bit, you know?
Yeah, it does feel as toned down a bit. Or maybe what we're being fed is toned down. I don't know. It's weird. Did you listen to any of the debates?
Bits of both.
Yeah, same. But it's really weird.
The first one was a washout, wasn't it?
Well, it's just bad. But I remember saying, I said to you the other day, didn't I? After the first one, where it was a shit show, isn't it? And, you know, arguing, sort of shouting over each other and stuff like that. Probably Trump's fault, more than Biden's fault, definitely. Yeah. But that was all over the BBC the next day, on my BBC podcast that I listened to, all over it. And then the latest one that they had, by all accounts, even Van Jones has said that it was Trump's best performance. And even his critics were saying it was his best performance, as well as his supporters. And I didn't get anything like that on the BBC. And it's strange. And it's just that's just an indication of bias, isn't it? It's not the stuff that they don't tell fibs. You know, they do their best to be honest. But often it's what they leave out.
Yeah.
And I just think that's a bit... You know, I just think that we always look at the worst examples of the opposing view, and that's the we show the cranks, don't they? They always expose the cranks, and then people that aren't really haven't got the time to follow it fully feel that everyone who doesn't think like them must be a crank because that's what the other side is. But there isn't. There's plenty of very very sane people. You know.
Well, yeah, you got saying that about the debate. I noticed that with the vice president debate. And quite a few clips I watched. I thought Pence brought up some really good points.
Yeah,
and at one point he said he called her up she was a judge, wasn't she?
Attorney General, wasn't she?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. So her record during her time in office was supposedly really bad, especially for young black guys, and the percentage of black guys who were incarcerated had gone up. And I just found it really telling that he pulled her up on that, and he really kind of hammered it home. And her response was a kind of nervous laugh. And it's interesting because it was one. We've had 4 months of BLM and justice for George Floyd and black communities all over the world, and it's been all over the BBC. And so I thought that was a really important moment where you've got the vice president, probably going to be the vice president, who possibly may well be. I mean, if Biden drops out at some point, may well be the president. Is actually asked a specific point on that matter, which she couldn't answer, and he definitely won that part of the debate. And there's hardly a word said. But what they did decide to run with on the BBC and on the front page of my YouTube feed was that he had a fly on his head.
Yeah, that's how dumb it is. Yeah.
And it's like, and I was saying to someone in work, they were saying, who won the debate? And I said, well, I'm not. And they mentioned, oh, I saw a poll that she'd won the debate. And I'm like, well, I know she didn't win the debate. If she'd have won the debate, the media wouldn't be talking about a fly on Pence's head.
Yeah. We deserve it. We deserve the people that, you know, that's what I've said, that the quality of commentary in America, the quality of journalism today in America, they always say that you get what you deserve, you get the politicians you deserve. And I think that's what, you know, this is it. They've created a circus, and don't be surprised when you get clowns. I listened to a Joe Rogan the other day, and he had two people that spend their life trying to get wrong convictions in America, because I think that's one of the one of the most scandalous things, isn't it? Because a lot of it is plea bargaining, isn't it? Where you're threatened with such a heavy sentence, and you haven't got the quality, the access. A lot of people poor and disproportionately black. You haven't got the access and the money to good quality defence. So much of it that they save so much money because they've got so much going through the system with plea bargaining and stuff. And when she was the Attorney General, there was a guy that they were trying to get off who had the death sentence and he was going to get executed, and he wanted access to information. And she knew that they had stuff that would have proved his innocence, but they went on and they fought him his ability to get it. Now, I'm not necessarily blaming her for that as an individual, because it might be a fault in the system, but it is odd that that's not being spoken about. My other issue with her was when she had the debates with Biden. She implied that he was racist, because I think there was something to do with school busing, wasn't there? What it was there was that even though segregation had finished, the schools were still quite segregated. So they were going to try and bus kids from different areas into white areas. And he voted against it.
Sorry, so this was the debate for the nomination?
Yeah, for the nomination, And he voted against it. So she implied that anyone who'd vote against that was evidence of racism. She did this very emotional thing that she was one of the girls that was bussed on, blah, 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 blah. And she implied racism. And when you read into it a little bit more, over 50% of black people polled at the Times didn't believe in it. So it wasn't necessarily how it looks from today. You had to see it at that time. And again, I'm not passing judgment on it. I'm a totally different bloody continent. But I'm just saying it's not as simple as that. And then I think
But also, do you remember when she was asked about it, once she became vice president, and who was it? It was one of the big interviewers, one of those kind of daily shows or whatever. Stephen Colbert, I think.
Yeah.
Stephen Colbert was interviewing her and said to her, "What you were quite harsh on Biden during the debates.
Yeah.
What are your and now you're on his side. Why? What happened? What? And she just turned around and kind of giggled nervously, like she does.
Yeah.
That it was, and it's like, yeah, but you hit him with some real haymakers. What? They didn't mean it. They weren't honest.
Yeah.
They didn't mean anything. It was a debate.
And she just said it was a debate.
Same way that the kind of the whole Hitler thing, I think it's disgusting.
Yeah.
When you know that someone's not a racist, when you know they're not Hitler, when you just go out your way to say those things, and don't get me wrong, Trump lies all the time, but I find it disgusting when people who pretend that they're so honest, are not.
Yeah, no, exactly. And that was, you know, as if, what are you so, that's what her point was, but it was a debate. Are you so naive not to understand that it was a debate and I had to win the debate? But I remember at the time, they were even talking about it, that it's on CNN, as if that's a viable way of arguing. So they're basically admitting that it's fair to throw that accusation around in a debate. Even if you know it's not true, and so, but then don't get confused when people don't believe you next time you do it. I mean, it's basic cry wolf, isn't it? I mean, we're taught that story. I mean, I've read that story to my kids from 2 or 3 years old, and I've always used the Mark Twain to my son, the Mark Twain quote, that if you get a reputation as an early riser, you can sleep till noon. And it's the same thing, you know. You don't just call it out because people aren't going to believe you. And there comes a point where if everything is racist, nothing's racist, because people just, you know, it's not just racism, it's everything. You know, if all you do to win an argument is...
It's exactly, if everything's a lie, then why are you so surprised that you got Trump?
Yeah, no, exactly. He is the product of all racism.
Because no one believes you anymore, and that was always my argument with Obama. Yeah. I mean, I like the guy, he came across as quite a nice bloke. But I always remember being stuck on that kind of that whole mantra he had at the start, like change, yes we can. And that whole kind of hypnotic thing that was like reading people in, and I was really like, I find it a bit weird and nasty. And that whole shtick, and he had 8 years and he didn't do anything, done very little. I mean, but that's the thing, I mean, a lot, this whole drama about Biden and Trump, whoever wins, they're not going to do much anyway. I mean, look, all these people screaming in the street, how much has their life actually changed under Trump? Probably very little.
Mm.
But that whole, like, the drama with Obama and how much he was going to change your life. And then you come to the end of 8 years and nothing's changed.
Mm.
So what? And you're surprised that people don't actually believe politicians anymore.
Yeah, and that's the worry, because just... everyone's just really cynical about everything, aren't they? That is the worry. I mean, it was the Hannah Arendt made a comment. Had a famous saying that was, I think I've got it written down here actually. So it's better for me to read it than cock it up. But it's all about if everybody always lies to you, the consequence is not that you believe the lies, but rather that nobody believes anything any longer. And the people that no longer can believe anything can't make up its mind. It's deprived not only of its capacity to think and to judge, and with such people, then you can do with them as you please. And I think that's the problem. I think people just don't believe anything anymore. Now they just, in a sense, from authority figures, and then they'll believe anything from some old crank on YouTube. And that's what I find extraordinary. I get that I totally understand that you're cynical with the media, because I'm sometimes my Facebook, you know what it does, it gives you memories. But I remember from 4 years, I remember on day one of Trump winning the election, there were three blatant lies. I think it was about a bust, it was about this, that and the other. And look, and don't get me wrong, then Trump lies as well. I mean, it's not certainly not just one-sided. But you're meant to trust the media, aren't you? That's the issue. I mean, the big issue that's been happening over the last couple of weeks was the New York Post, which is an American tabloid, I think, did the thing about Hunter Biden, Joe Biden's son. He basically brought in his laptop into a blind computer man shop who fixes computers, and the bloke's gone into his computer and found a load of dodgy emails and a load of dodgy videos of him with a crack pipe and emails to whoever, stuff that happened over Ukraine, stuff that happened with China. He got a contract in an energy company that he was getting $50,000 a month or something, wasn't it, due to a deal in Ukraine. That was on the back of his dad, and this was a big story because Joe Biden said that he never had in contact with his son's business dealings, but the emails that within the video showed that wasn't the case. Now, I'm not sure if it's crime of the century, because I bet if you looked at Trump's kids, you'd probably have the same sort of thing. But the thing was, no one reported it. No one was allowed to share that story on Twitter. Twitter then took New York Post down. I think it's been 2 weeks and they're still not up. They're still banned off Twitter. Yet no one has said that the information is actually untrue.
A New York Post isn't just some crap like tabloid.
No.
New York Post is, I think, one of the oldest newspapers in America. Yeah. It started by Alexander Hamilton, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I know it's turned into a bit of a tabloid since, but it's still, I think it's like the third biggest biggest seller in the States.
Yeah, so people are, you know, so there is no balance. And then, and what they said was, no, we can't, because it's not verified. And it's like, yeah, but every story that you've been running for the last 4 years on Trump wasn't verified. I mean, the Russian collusion came to nothing. Now, I know he didn't... I don't think collusion was proved, but Russian interference was proved, wasn't it? But, you know, I think there was definitely Russian interference in social media that affects society.
Yeah, but didn't have anything to do with him.
No,
it?
Exactly. So that was Russian collusion.
His unwillingness to go along with the investigation.
Yeah, and there was some.
But that's him. And obviously, you could say that that's just him.
Yeah.
He's not a politician, is he? Do you know what I mean? He's a businessman that wants to save his own arse.
But you know also the other story that's come to nothing, that has got nothing, because the investigation said it was all a load of stuff, a load of rubbish, was the Guardian Carol Cadwallader stuff. What was the name of that company?
What was that about?
You know the company was all right at Brexit when she linked it all to Brexit and they were...
Oh, yes. What Cambridge Analytica?
Cambridge Analytica, yeah. That was all... That was just a group of Eton boys giving it the big and saying, we can do this, we can do that. When they've investigated it, it was nothing. So her story that she won awards for, again, has come to nothing.
Right.
So that's another... Okay. But you don't get that. Everyone was saying, look how creepy it is and stuff, and they can get into your brains. And that's gone. Nothing. It's been proved been shown to be nothing. 3-year investigation. I'm sure she won't give her awards back, but the point of it is, it just seems that the whole system is against Trump, and that could be fair enough, because if you genuinely feel that he's a threat to everything that you hold dear, then I can understand the argument that you want to try and do everything to get him out of power. The problem with it is that if you destroy your credibility in the process of that.
Yeah.
Did you ever watch The Man for All Seasons?
No, I didn't. No.
Yeah, that's that old film, isn't it? About Cromwell, is it? I feel ashamed. I feel ashamed.
No, wasn't it?
No, it was
Henry VIII,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah, Henry VIII and... His statue is Henry Moore, is it? Moore, isn't it? Thomas Moore. And there was a big... Are you there still?
Yeah.
There was a big thing where he was arguing with someone, and they were saying about the law, and he was talking about the law, and the other guy was saying, "Don't sod the law, chop the you know." Get that down. You've got that. This man is a danger. You can't. And his argument was, no, you can't, because if you chop down every forest of law just to get who you want, when they turn on you, when the storm comes for you, and you've got no forest for protection, what will you do? And that's the argument. Yes. Have they destroyed their own credibility in their determination to get rid of him? And that's what I worry about, because I think they have the media. I mean, who trusts anyone anymore? You know, no, very few. Where are the trusted sources? I mean, the BBC is good is as good as you're going to get, but I just can't take them serious anymore. Sadly, I mean, news wise, fine, but they've gone so. I hate using the word, but it's a shortcut woke on every subject. Yeah. On every subject, they've just gone. Yeah. You know, they speak for what, 5% of the population. Because they think that's what they're meant to do, because they're the loudest voices on Twitter, whereas the vast majority of people just think it's mad.
Yeah.
So it's a worry. And I always said to you, didn't I? I didn't think Trump was a problem. I always thought he was a symptom of the problem.
It comes
from the problems. I think that's my worry, because you think about the financial crisis from 2008, I don't think we realise how much of a massive effect that had, because if you look at what came from that, that led to Occupy Wall Street, and it led to the Tea Party directly, didn't it? Those two groups.
Yeah.
And you can argue that Trump is the Tea Party.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Occupy Wall Street are the Democrats. And And so you wonder what, and this COVID stuff is so much bigger than the financial crisis, I think. So I've gone on and on. So we don't know where we're going to be in 10 years' time. What is going to lead to? What resentment? What anger? I mean, we hope it will bring some increased levels of fairness. But at the moment, you know, the loudest voices are the people that want to smash it all down.
Yeah. And that's the problem the Democrats got. And I suppose, like Labour, in a way, a lot of the leftist movements is that they're kind of like almost, I see a fracturing in their parties, between the hard lefties and the more centrists, you know, the old part of the party and the new people coming up.
Well, do you know what I listened to today? I don't know if you'd listened to it. George Galloway on Trigonometry podcast.
I did start listening to it. Yeah.
Well, he makes that point exactly.
The first 15 minutes. He seems all right, doesn't he?
Yeah. Apart from we should be a bit more like China. But which he said later on. But I think his analysis was bang on right. That you've got, you know, the new left that come through that talk about this kind of woke left isn't left at all. And I don't think it's very left at all. I think it's really kind of exclusionary to working classes. I mean, it's changed massively, but. But I think someone made a really good point yesterday on I think the Brett Weinstein podcast that I listened to yesterday, that I think he made the point that capitalism is a very, very, very successful system in generating large amounts of money, capital, where its fault is that it's not worked out how to distribute that wealth in a fair way. And I think that's a fair point. But so many people now think the answer is to smash the machine that creates the money. And I think I'll listen to someone else make it an analogy that a woman had cooked an apple pie, and for her three kids, and they were all arguing over who's got the most and who's got more. And in the end, she loses her temper and throws it against the wall, and none of them get anything. Which is fine. Yeah. Finally, they've got equality, but you've got a third of nothing. It's still nothing. So the danger is, if you do want to just smash the machine that creates it, that's just insane. You've got to try and find a way of making that machine fairer. So we'll see. Look, by the time we hopefully won't leave it 4 months. But yeah, next week we'll be. Interesting, and hopefully it just doesn't go mental. If Trump wins again, I just really worry. I just think everyone would be like George Floyd all over again, I think. And that was that was tough.
Yes, possibly, but there's also, I think there's definitely something to be said for, if he does win again, I could see a world in which the media aren't as crazy as they've been for the last 4 years.
Really?
Yeah, just because when you think about it, like, well, they've got nothing to fight against. I suppose they could go a lot. They could go on with the idea that he won't give it up after his second term.
Yeah.
But essentially, he's not going to run again.
Yeah.
So they're pretty much anyone who's reasonably sane, and he's knocking on a bit. It's not like he's going to. He hasn't got 10 to 15 years left in him, is he? It's like he's going to be out in 4 years, and there's nothing you can do about it. And he's not running for a re-election, so just go with it. You know what I mean?
He's just a troll, isn't he? Yeah, because you know that thing. You know that thing because you're only allowed 2 terms. It's in the constitution. Yeah. So when he's at rallies,
and he'll just wind people. And that's but that's what pisses me off about it.
Yeah,
because he'll troll people. It's like he will. He'll turn around and say, you know, maybe I should have a third term because they took away the first one.
No, because he was getting them to say 12 more years, wasn't he? Yeah. They're on their good time. You know,
and everyone's loving it and going along with it. But then the other side will jump on that and take it as gospel.
Yeah, no, that's it. Yeah, so they take the joke as serious. But look, maybe it's not a joke. Maybe we're the idiots. Who knows? But yeah, you don't want. I'm just tired of it.
I know.
It's quite funny, but it's exhausting. It's not normal, is it? It's not normal. It really isn't normal. It's become normal. No, we've got used to it, but it's not normal.
You can't. I mean, I saw a clip today, I think it was from yesterday or the last couple of days, of him on stage somewhere. And it's just, he just hits you with so much, you can't keep up with it, can you?
Yeah, no, yeah.
Nothing ever sticks, because there's just so much, it's just a barrage of it.
Yeah.
I think that's his superpower, that he can just wind so many people up constantly that you haven't got time for anything to stick to and anything to become enough of an issue.
Because it's the next thing,
on stage somewhere in front of a big crowd, and he turned around, I can't remember who he exactly what he said, but having a go at CNN, out of these phony bastards. You don't, I've never ever heard a president of America calling a news network a bunch of bastards.
It is mad, isn't it? It is insane. It is insane. But I was thinking about it the other day, that his fake news, whenever they say something he doesn't like, it's fake news. But I thought, but it's the polar opposite, because whenever they say, whenever their back is against the wall, is Russian interference. You know, the whole thing is Russian interference. And even the FBI has said, no, there is no evidence that this is Russian interference. But it's the same deflectionary tactic, isn't it? That you've just fed something to your side, that it's kind of a defence mechanism, isn't it? So now whenever you've given them a tool, that whenever there's something you don't like, fake news, Russian interference, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
I just hope that Trump loses, and I hope.
I think he will. Yeah. I do think he will. And I will miss him in a way, because you're right. The reason I kind of warm to him, a lot of it's to do with, because I kind of like the other side wind me up so much with their kind of fake honesty.
Yeah.
Their fake sincerity. And that pisses me off more than his vulgarity.
Yeah.
But another thing that pisses me is I just find him a bit funny.
Yeah.
I just find him really funny. And I know it's wrong. I know it's not what he shouldn't be in that position. And I said before, I'd never have voted for him.
Yeah. No, and I wouldn't. Yeah, and I wouldn't now. But you're right.
He is appealing. He's funny.
Yeah, but if you don't see it, you don't see it. Because I remember I had my mate round painting a little while back, and it was after he'd done a thing, and he was saying he hates him, he's not funny and stuff. And that was my issue. That there was that email going around when he was visiting England. He said that you don't, and the part of it was you don't have a sense of humour. And I thought, well, if you don't think he's got a sense of humour, you're not watching. And if you don't know your enemy, you're not likely to be able to beat your enemy. That's the whole point. So I got our mate to listen to the thing, and he was in hysterics. So there is a there is a certain appeal. And if you don't think it's only because you haven't seen those clips.
So, look,
the test would be, this is what I fear, that I never thought he was a monster, but there's something in the system that created him. And I think if the Democrats win and they go crazy, then you're likely to get crazy as a reaction. And I'm not interested where the crazy started, to be honest. You could argue that it's crazy because he's been crazy. And I think, I think when he won, like, we're going to finish in a minute, but when he won, we hoped, it was the craziness that led to him, yeah? You look at the Jonathan Pye videos at the time, it was the whole politically correct, woke kind of stuff that kind of cancel culture, that whole thing which led to him. And I was hoping that they would learn a lesson from that and become more sane. That hasn't happened. They've become madder. So I've now come, I think it's right to say that he's generating a lot of this madness. So I hope that when he's gone, I hope he goes, and I hope that when he goes, the madness will stop. But there is a possibility that they will see that this is now the new norm and this is how they function. And if this carries on and this is how they function, then what you're going to get to beat that, I worry, will be worse than what we've got at the moment. We'll see. Anyway, we call it a day. Shall we?
Yeah.
Have you got anything else you want to say?
No, it's all good. No,
I'm getting in trouble.
When we do a post-election.
Okay, yeah. So I'm getting shouted at because I talk too loud and my daughter's trying to go to sleep. So, hopefully, speak in a couple of weeks, yeah? Okay, mate.
Okay.
Good luck. See you, Jules.
See ya.
Night.
Bye-bye.
Bye.